Cleared all right?
You rolling?
Yes.
We're rolling. Okay. Well, we come to a close of an amazing week. And it's amazing because we serve an amazing God. And we serve an amazing Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And as I said this morning at Chapel on the Hill, this is God's week. He has built this week. And when you come and you spend a week here, you get to experience God and experience what He's built, and you watch what He's built into people. And then you get to watch that play itself out through people. Love, acceptance, relationship. So God is just an amazing, awesome God. This evening, as I wrap up, let me open with prayer. Heavenly Father, we are so deeply grateful for You above all things. We're grateful that You're a God of love and mercy, grace, compassion, slow to anger, tender-hearted, kind, faithful, merciful. Yes, Lord. And Lord, I just ask that this evening, again, that my thoughts would be Your thoughts. My words will be Your thoughts. And that we can just enjoy fellowship with You this evening in a rich way. So, Lord Jesus, I pray these things in Your precious and holy name. Amen. So my last little family story is with Kyle's daughter, Lace. Her name's Alacia, or Lacey. And he got married in late March. And Audrey, his wife, had Lacey, and so she's come into the family. And she's an absolute doll. If you've ever seen the movie Moana, Lacey looks just like Moana. I mean, she's got the hair and the face. Just a beautiful little girl. And 2 years ago was Audrey and Lacey's first year at our family vacation. And Lacey and I are hanging out in the pool together. And she looks at me and she goes, Papa Gary, why you have boobies? And I said, what? She goes, why you have boobies? I said, girlfriend, these are man muscles. These are not boobies. She goes, no, Papa, I think your boobies look like nannies. I'm sorry. I said, fair enough. I'm not going to win this battle. I'm not going to convince her I got man muscles. Yeah, you got to love the honesty and truthfulness of children that are 3, 4, and 5. I mean, sometimes the words that can come out can be mortifying if you're in public, especially. But we were with family, so that was all good. So anyway. So I'm going to talk about some suffering tonight. I'm going to talk about some life lessons and just some issues of the heart as I wrap this up. And my issues in my life have not been alcohol, have not been drugs, have not been sexual promiscuity or pornography. Those have not been my issues. My issues, as far back as I can remember, have been fear. They've been worry. And I know that fear and worry and living a life that performance-based, and you always got to be on, and you always got to be pleasing somebody. That's just, you know, that's what I grew up with. That's how I was trained, and it tends to kind of hang on and drag behind me in life. So those have been really the things that I've struggled with. Fear of failure, not measuring up, not performing, fear of making a mistake. Man, I tell you, it's a hard way to live life, really. Having these fears of making mistakes, and it's caused me to really live a very, very conservative, not a big risk-taking person. There are a lot of verses. God, there's everything we got to deal with in life. God will address every one of these in His Word. It is so complete, it's absolutely amazing. And, you know, Joshua 1, 6 through 9, God tells Joshua 3 times to be strong and courageous. And in the very last verse in 9, He says, but Joshua, I will always be with you. I will never leave you or forsake you. You know, in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, He's saying, just trust me with all your heart. Don't try to understand the things that are going to go on in your life. Just acknowledge who I am, and I'm going to take care of you. Isaiah 41:10, fear not, for I'm with you. Be not dismayed or discouraged, because I'm your God. And what is God going to do? I am going to strengthen you, and I'm going to uphold you with my righteous right hand. So, I mean, there are a ton of verses on this stuff, but, you know, God, what I found is in these verses, when he asks me to do one thing, he's probably saying he's doing three things. Or if he's asking me to do two, he's probably saying I'm going to do three or four things. He doesn't ask a lot, but what he does ask, will you be faithful? Will you be obedient? Will you trust me? And I'm amazed at God's grace when I had talked about the adulterous relationship that I had, and then about a year and a half later, God brings Terry into my life. And still to this day, I will look back and just, I'm amazed at the grace of God that he would give me a woman like Terry. And she's just been an absolutely extraordinary woman, and my best friend, literally, that she is. I think for us, being best friends in a marriage, if it's a Tuesday afternoon and it's raining, that's who I want to be with on a Tuesday afternoon when it's raining. That's who I would choose to be with. So I just deeply love you. When we were first married, I was thinking about, I'm probably still pretty dependent on my Paul, you know, at this point as my spiritual parent. And I probably hadn't broken from him. I guess you can break from a spiritual parent, you know, and maybe the relationship changes. But I was still going to him, you know, getting counsel from stuff. And he would give me some counsel. And then I'd come home and I would talk to Terry about it. And I'd just kind of throw it out there. And she would give me the same counsel. And the reason I didn't go to her, because I didn't know her that well yet. And I didn't really trust her. And I thought, well, she ain't going to know about this stuff. She's not going to know how to tell, you know, give me any counsel on anything. So I started, what I did a couple of times is purposefully I got counsel from my Paul, and then I sought her. And what do you think the counsel she gave me? It's absolutely the same as what my Paul's given me. And I'm thinking, how is this happening? And he said, Gary, you don't honor your wife. You have got to learn to honor her. And Sam talked about this verse last night, 1 Peter 3:7. Husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. Honor her as the weaker vessel. You are joint heirs in the grace of life. And you do these things so your prayers won't be hindered. Your relationship with me is going to be hindered if you can't figure out how to live with her in an understanding way and how to honor her. And so I said, God, I get it. So then I started backing off of my Paul, and I start going to my wife a little bit more because I'm beginning to trust her. And God is giving me great counsel through my wife. Now the other thing that I've had to learn, it probably seems more recent, but learning to listen to my wife. And I'm going to talk about my mother, who's elderly, and I'm an only child, as I mentioned the other night, and I have an issue, and I don't even know what the issue is, but it causes me to kind of have a bad attitude with my mom sometimes, and she is an absolute sweetheart of a woman, loving, caring, kind, one of the most generous, hospitable women you would ever want to meet. And I'm thinking, Gary, what is going on? I'm going to tell you, I don't know. I still don't know what the issue is. And Terry's been extraordinary in helping me take care of my mom. And we would go pick her up, and my mom's sitting on a bench, and she'd get up, walk over, come get in the car. And I'd get this look, like, what are you doing? I said, what do you mean, what am I doing? Why aren't you going to get the door for your mom? I said, she's 10 feet. Okay, she can walk 10 feet and open the door. And I said, and so we go, we come back, she gets out. My mom, you know, goes up to her apartment. Terry's looking at me, what are you doing? I said, what do you mean? She goes, why aren't you walking your mother up to her apartment? I said, look, I don't want mom to lose her independence, okay? I want her to remain dependent. You know, and so, and if I start doing this stuff, she's going to become more dependent on me. And I'm struggling with that. And so then she goes, well, you know, if that were Kyle or Cameron, I would want them to open my door. I would want them to walk me to my room. And I'm saying, oh, you can't start throwing the guilt card on me. I mean, that's just absolutely wrong. I said, on top of that, I feel like you're trying to control me. I feel like you're trying to mother me. I'm 60 years old. I don't need you to mother me and try to do all that. So she goes, well, I just think you need to honor your mother. Oh, now you're throwing the honor card. So this goes on for a while. I'm not saying I immediately responded to this because I'm working through the emotions. And I said, do you realize that, have you ever seen a Formula One car when they come into a pit stop? I mean, it's 2 to 3 seconds and they're gone. And I said, by the time I get out of the car and I get around, she's already in the door. I'm going to have to run like a Formula One pit stop. And she goes, well, okay. So anyway, I start running around every time to get over there to get the door open for my mom. And I'm grumbling as I'm doing it. And then we get home and then I take mom up to her apartment. And she goes, are you telling your mom you love her? Yes, I'm telling my mom I love her. So, you know, just, you know, learning to listen. And as I've spent time with my Paul, you know, even today he'll tell me stories where his wife will tell him he needs to do something and he kind of grumbles along like, no. And then he goes before the Lord and the Lord goes, yeah, you need to listen to that. You know? So God, you know, you ladies are wonderful. God has put you in our life to help us grow up, to learn humility, you know. So hopefully, gentlemen, you can accept, you know, the things. And please, women, don't weaponize what I'm telling you tonight. But let's just be kind and gentle and gracious, you know, with the things you're going to tell us. And your expectations may be low. Give us an opportunity to grow into it. But who, you know, who are you, Lord? Well, you're a God of honor. You're a God of care. You're a God who is tenderhearted. As I think about my mom. Well, what do you want me to do, Lord? Well, that's pretty simple. I want you to honor your mother. You know, whatever that's going to look like, you need to figure out how to honor your mother. And I've now become kind of her primary caregiver now that I'm, I was going to say unemployed, but I'm unemployed for the rest of my day, so retired. But we have ladies that come in and help during the week as well, but I'm primarily the caregiver. And God is slowly changing my heart to really have some joy in that and to enjoy the time that her and I get to spend together. My oldest son, Tyler, Scott's talking about county sandwiches. Anybody's ever experienced a county sandwich? My son spent 3 months in Harris County Jail. And that was, he was a little white boy, about 5'8", 140 pounds, and he was not in the majority. And so, you know, just praying that God would take care of him, and God did. God took care of him, but God also brought a change of heart while he sat in there. So it was amazing to watch that. But I got to tell you, that whole jail system's a whole nother world. And it's not something I could even understand because I don't come out of that world. And I felt so much compassion for those people because they just seem like they're in a do loop. And it just almost feels hopeless at the time that they're never going to get out of the do loops. And mom's ringing their young children every week and we're going to go see daddy, you know. And I'm just thinking, what a life, what a way to grow up. Going to visit your daddy in jail. But that was, you know, that there was humility for that in the beginning. There was shame in that, but that was just my pride working in the middle of that. And Tyler was, he was rebellious, but his rebellion was very stealth, kind of under the radar. And it was hard. It was hard for me. It was hard for his mother. He lived in his mother's home, so I didn't really get the full brunt of what that rebellion was like. And, you know, Terry was watching all of this, and I think she, you know, she probably felt sad about it. But on the other hand, there was a little bit of judging because, well, this is not in our home. This is not going to touch our home. And I would just say, all I can tell you is that I just hope you don't ever have to experience this because this is hard. Well, God had in store for us a rebellious son. It was our firstborn. And Kyle, in about the age of 16, I do have permission to talk about Kyle. I have learned if I don't have permission to talk about my children, and I learned a hard lesson talking about them, and they didn't give me permission, and they didn't like that at all. So I just encourage you to be sure you have permission to talk about your children. If not, then just talk in general about who it is. But about the 16, you know, when Kyle had a very intense personality. He loved to argue. And I remember the first time this rebellion got kicked off, and he and I've got an argument going on. I've never argued in my life, and I'm sitting here going, I don't know what I'm doing. This is point counterpoint. Neither one's going to win this argument, and this is insane. And I'm looking around, and Terry's gone. She started with me, but she's gone. And I thought, well, I've lost my support now. And so after the argument's over, I find her, and I said, what is going on? She goes, well, Gary, you know I grew up in an alcoholic home, okay? This was just what my home was like growing up. She goes, I can't do this. It just triggered me back into my home. I said, you know what? I am grateful you let me know that, because now when this stuff kicks off, you just go to the bathroom and you go pray, because that's what she was doing there, praying for that. And this went on for 3 years, and it did not matter. Both Tyler and Kyle had very high tolerances for consequences, so it almost didn't matter what we did, and we did a lot, but it just never seemed to make a difference. It didn't seem to move the needle. And there were a few times it got physical. That was very foreign to me, getting physical with Kyle. And there were a couple of times when Kyle and Terry are kind of going at it, and Kyle wants to, he takes a step towards her. And so I step in between the two of them. He goes, what are you doing? I said, well, man, are you going after your mother? Because that's not going to happen. And he goes, no, I'm not. Well, I goes, I don't know. And he goes, you just taking up for mom? I said, what do you think? Yes, absolutely, I'm going to take up for your mother. And so this is what we're dealing with for the next 3 years. But the battle, the spiritual battle that we were fighting, that Satan is unmercifully relentless. God is relentlessly gracious. And we are dealing with unmerciful, relentless attack on our hearts as we are dealing with Kyle, because we're trying to figure out, what do we do? Nothing seems to be working. Even at times, we're not in agreement on how we're going to make a decision. But Terry would say, you decide what we're going to do, and we'll go with it. And there are times it was the wrong decision. But I am deeply grateful for Terry, because she would just come say, hey, put her arm around me and said, you know what, that didn't go so well. Let's step back and let's see if we can come at this another way. As opposed to saying, well, I told you so. You went with your decision. You didn't go with mine. Now look, here we are. So I was grateful that was not something, because I felt bad enough as it was, and we're dealing with something we don't know what to do. And then here comes the evil one. What kind of Christian parents are y'all? Y'all are pitiful. Your Christian parents, your children ought to be toeing the line. They ought to be straight and narrow, and they're not. You're failing. You're miserable as Christian parents. And you hear that enough, and you actually begin to believe it a little bit. Unfortunately, you do. And we begin to feel we're just failing. We have no idea what we're doing. God, we don't know what to do in the midst of this. We're praying. We're doing the best we can to trust Him. But the needle's not moving. And the needle never moved with Kyle. In 3 years of this, you know, that we dealt with the chaos. And then finally he leaves and we get peace. But here's the beauty of God. As you go through these things, He is so spot on in what you need in His Word. In Romans 15:13, I'm reading one day, it's amazing how many times God comes to me just in my daily reading and just will speak to something that is going on. And this is Romans 15:13. And it says, now may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, that you may abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Man, was that not beautiful timing and so encouraging, that the God of hope would fill you with all joy. We had no joy. We had no peace. That you would fill us with joy and peace. And that you may abound in hope, in God's hope that He gives to us, the hope in the Jesus Christ, and by the power of the Holy Spirit. And that was so encouraging. It didn't change the circumstances. Those were not changing. But God was changing us. He was moving us into more hope and into joy, and trying to enjoy a little bit of peace in the midst of it. And so we hung on to that verse a lot as we walked through that time period, just learning to trust God, to wait on Him. And I will say the other thing that I learned, and you ladies will be able to relate to this, the New Testament, you know, in the Gospels, it talks about the heart of Mary and how she pondered things in her heart. And I began to watch what the heart of a mother looked like, because I didn't get to see it with Tyler's mother. And Terry is not a crier at all, very rarely. She cried for 3 years. I mean, this was just breaking her heart. And so God gave me a glimpse of what a mother's heart feels for her children. Because God does something with you ladies carrying these children for those 9 months, and then you go through the pain of labor and delivery, and you deliver this child, and you are connected to them in a way that, husbands, we will never, ever understand what that's like. But God gave me just a smidgen of a glimpse, and so I could have a little greater appreciation of her heart towards the children. So, who are you, God? You're a God of faith. You're a God of hope. You're a God of peace. You're a God of strength. You're a God of grace. Well, what do you want us to do, Lord? I want you to pray. I want you to wait. And I want you to trust. Okay. Well, 3 years ago, we were still praying and waiting. But we're learning to trust God in the midst, even though nothing's changing out here. But God is changing us here. Just a little. It's not significant. But God, but you have to understand, God is slow and steady. He's got to the, as I talked the other day, He's got till the end of my life to finish His work and perfect it. So He is just slow and steady and just relentless with His grace. I was thinking about the trappings of this world. Wealth, possessions, standard of living, the pride of things. And let's bring up a slide if you got one, man. I love this verse, Revelation 3:17. It says, "You say, I am rich, I have acquired wealth, and do not need a thing. But do you not realize you're wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, you're naked?" God says, you think you have these things that are going to make life wonderful. But in reality, that's not what you are. You got some heart issues you got to deal with. And the world is not going to take care of the heart issues that you have going on. Next one, please. And then Luke 12:15. Then He said to them, "Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." But man, the world would tell you, possessions, wealth, money, they give you security. And they don't. It's a flat out lie. In John 14:27, Jesus says, "Peace I give to you, my peace. Not as the world gives, do I give to you. Let not your hearts be troubled or afraid." You know what the peace of Jesus, that's right here in our hearts and our souls. You know what the peace that the world offers you? Wealth, money, possessions. Does that give you peace? If you've ever had much of it, it doesn't give you much peace, because you're worried. What's the stock market doing today? What are my investments doing today? You can begin to get kind of wrapped up in that stuff, and you think it's going to give you, because you have a nice standard of living, you have a nice home, got some money in the bank, that life's all good. But you know what? That stuff can go in a heartbeat. But God's peace is never going anywhere. It's for eternity. And this is what He is encouraging us to latch on to. Latch on to my peace and not the things of this world. I had my last job. I did a job for 26 years without work for several months, and then went to work for a bank. And over 40 years, I did 4 jobs, but I only did them individually. I never did all of them combined. And when I got offered this job, they offered me 3 of the 4 jobs I'd done. I thought, great, man, I'm going to get paid for my experience. This is going to be a really wonderful thing. But they also added a few other things on top of it. But I was good. And I had if I could have named my salary, I had a dream salary in my mind for a long time. Well, that's the salary I got. my dream salary. So I'm thinking, this is wonderful. I get to use my experience. I'm going to get my dream salary. 3 months in, I'm thinking, I don't know if I can do this job. This job is so stressful. And I went and I told my supervisor, I said, there's a part of this job I can tell you with certainty I'm never going to get to, because it's going to take training and I can barely do my job now. And he goes, well, let's just kind of let it go and let's see how, if it works. I said, this is not going to work itself out, I can tell you right now. I said, why don't we just cut my salary and take this thing away? And he goes, no, we're not going to do that. So I said, okay. And eventually, this puts me into seeing a cardiologist. I'm having chest pains. I can't sleep at night. The stress, I've never endured stress like this. And fortunately, there wasn't anything cardiovascular going on. It was just inflammation in my man muscles. And fortunately, I could handle man muscle inflammation. But God gave me, you can put those verses up. I didn't put all, some of these I kind of summarized a little bit. But when my stress started coming on, I went and, these are just the verses that I chose. And I would start praying these verses when this stress hit me. Fervently praying right there in my jaw. And I have to tell you, I will tell you with 100% certainty, either immediately when I got through praying, I had peace. I had the peace of Jesus Christ. Sometimes it might last, the stress might last through the end of the day. But every single time, God brought that transcending peace. And some days, my stress turned to peace, and then I'm walking out, skipping along, joy. I'm going, God, this is amazing. Who does this but you? To give me joy when I was just so burdened and so racked up with this stress. And starting, you know, at the beginning of last year, I told Terry, I said, I don't think I can do this job. I'm 66 years old. No, 60, yeah, 66.
You're 64
at that time. No, last January before last, man, I'm 65. Thank you for trying to make me younger. Anyway, I just said, I can't handle the stress at this age, and I shouldn't be dealing with this kind of stress. So I said, I'll make it to December. And then right before we came here, I said, I can't do it. I just simply cannot do this. I'm resigning in July. And she said, okay, I'm good. And I think you guys already know the outcome of this. We're here. We go home. I work a week. On Monday, the president shows up at our office, which he does sometimes on Monday mornings. And my supervisor calls me in. We go in the conference room. The door closes. I go, oh, I think I know what's coming right here. And the president says, yeah, we're going to let you go. And man, in that moment, I thought, oh, thank you, God. The stress is going to be gone now. I don't have to deal with this stuff. And he said, yeah, we're overpaying you, and you're not doing all your... And I said, I know I'm not doing all my job. And I told my supervisor that. And did you know, by the way, I was willing to take a pay cut, you know? He said, it doesn't matter, okay? It's just not working out. I know you've been under stress, so we're going to cut you loose. And I said, that's great. So, but this is how God takes care of us. If I had resigned, well, I get no unemployment, all right? So I get fired, and I get unemployment. So I'm looking for work. Nobody has any interest in me, and I'm super happy about that because I really don't want to go back to work. I've kind of had enough. And so the two things happened the week before I get my last unemployment check. That's going to go away and Terry's Social Security starts. So God has just replaced the two. Just amazing, the timing of God. But a man that I had worked with for 20 years, that same week, calls me up and says, hey, we got an analyst position open, and I know you've, but our analysts now also do closing work. I know you've done both. We'd love to have you. And I said, well, what's the salary? It's a $25,000 pay raise. So I'm thinking, oh, man, my dream salary has just gotten a bonus. And I have to say, for a brief moment, I considered that salary. And I thought, there's no way. The stress is not worth the salary. It's just not. You couldn't pay me enough. And so I called him back the next day and said, man, I appreciate you thinking that, man, but I can't do this. And I told him why, that I just wouldn't be able to handle the job. So I'm just going to have to trust God to provide. And man, does he take care of us. It's just amazing, you know, with how he's preparing us, our retirement income. But before I left my job, I know that the retirement's coming, and I start thinking to myself, man, do we have enough? Do we have enough in retirement? I keep asking myself. And then I said, I'm asking, do we have enough, Terry? And then I'm thinking, maybe I should go talk to my Paul, ask him, do I have enough? I said, no, I don't need to throw out that number. That'd be maybe a prideful thing. I don't know. I don't need to go talk to him about this. This is between me and God. So I didn't go talk to him. And I just keep asking, is it enough? Is it enough? And then I finally get to the place and I say, well, I think it's enough. God begins to move the needle. And one night, I'm on a call with some good friends of mine. And I said, guys, this topic came. I said, it's enough. And Craig mentioned this verse the other night. And, you know, this is why it's enough. It's 1 Chronicles 29, 11, and 12. Because in there he says, riches and honor come from me alone, and I'm the ruler of all mankind. For me in this moment, it's about the riches. God has determined what our retirement is going to look like. He determined that amount. I didn't determine it. I mean, we saved and we did what we needed to do, but God determined what our retirement would look like. He would also determine what our retirement income monthly was going to look like. And I finally had peace because I know God's going to take care of us. He is providing for us. So, man, he's just a God of generosity. You can't begin to fathom how generous God can be, and a God who takes care of his own. What do you want me to do? Well, I want you to trust me with this. Okay? I know you're not working anymore. Just trust me with this. So I believe we're in a good place, you know. I will tell you, the other thing's been pretty amazing. And I was telling my Paul this the other night. I said, we have actually taken some money out probably at least three times now, and one was recent. And I said, you're not going to believe this. I said, the first time we took it out, God replaced it. The second time we took it out, God replaced it again in like 4 or 5 weeks. I said, this is amazing watching God do this, because I'm kind of thinking, oh, man, we're taking more out than what we budgeted. I'm not liking this too much. And then God, Gary, it's going to be okay. I am going to take care of you in this. So we're learning. You know, this is a whole season. This is our last quarter of life. And we're, you know, there's no more pay raises for me, and there's no more bonuses for me. Terry is still working, so that's been nice. And we're enjoying that we have her additional income. But, you know, we're just learning to trust God to take care of us. I have let's see, before I get there, I'm going to tell a quick story, a prayer story, answered to prayer. When Tyler was married to his wife, Christina, she's a jeweler, and she made Kyle this necklace and had a little piece of metal that was stamped, had a cross in it. Kyle just loved this necklace. And so we for about 7 years, we went to a little town called Utopia, which is about 15 miles southwest of Garner State Park. Beautiful home and on the river and stuff. And so we'd gone to Garner State Park, and there's a private area you can park and pay the owners. You're parked on River Rock, and then you just walk across the river and you can go into Garner State Park. And so we had been at the river all day. We come back, and there's a family right next to us, and they're cooking, and they asked if we would like to have some food. And you know, there's 12 of us, and we're thinking, man, your initial response is going to be no. Well, Bobby says, I'm hungry. So Bobby broke it open for us. And so, we gave those people so much joy to sit down and enjoy a meal with them. It was amazing. So I think I kind of learned at that point that if someone asks you to have a meal with them, have a meal with them. You know, it's going to be okay. So we get back home. No necklace. Can't find it. And we're looking everywhere. So Terry and I said, we're going to go back over there and we're going to look. And as we're getting ready to leave, Tyler's walking by and he goes, I give you about a 1% chance of finding that necklace. And I said, well, I give God 100% because he can see it. And right after I said that, I said, God, man, I think I've put you out there right now, okay? But here we go. And so we're driving, we're praying. Guys, you got to think about a necklace on River Rock, okay? So we show up, I go across the river. The family says, what are y'all doing? Well, we lost a necklace, we're trying to find it. Would you like some help? Yeah, so I come back and I said, man, I couldn't find it, you know? And Terry goes like that. And I said, what? She goes, yeah, one of the people helped, they found it down in the River Rock, you know? What do you think this does for our family? To know that we prayed and asking God to help us find this thing, a necklace in River Rock. So we get back, and the family is just blown away by this. And God has revealed himself to them in a way they probably hadn't much. We did this with the boys a lot growing up, but that's a pretty amazing thing, a necklace in River Rock. But I think what I begin to tell my family is that it's more important to know God for who he is than what he can do. And the reason for that is that if God doesn't come through in a way that I'm not getting my desired outcome in my prayer, or the timing isn't right, I honestly can get a little disappointed, or I can get frustrated because God's not coming through. But that's my issue. It's about who he is. It is not about what he can do, because there's nothing he can't do. But what do you want, Lord? I want you to know me above all things. I want you to know who I am. I want you to spend time with me. I want you to have an intimate relationship with me. I have the life verse. I think I mentioned the other night that Jeremiah 9:23 is, I think, my Paul's life verse. Rick, I believe you mentioned, did you mention your life verse the other night?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, I thought I heard that you say that. Okay. I thought I heard that say that. My life verse is Colossians 1:10, which says that you may walk worthy of the Lord, pleasing him, bearing fruit in every good work, and growing in the knowledge of God. The whole key to that verse is at the very end. Growing in the knowledge of God. Everything is going to flow from that. Walking in a manner worthy of the Lord, pleasing him, and bearing fruit is going to come from that relationship. It starts in me, and it works itself out. And that is, it all comes down to Jesus over and over and over, because he's the lifeblood in us. And he's the one that's giving that life away. If I will let him do it, then he will just give my life away all day long. So to make him known, to know him and make him known, to be, for me, to be patient with God, to be obedient, to be trustful, to be faithful, fervently pursuing him. And God is, as I've talked about, he's slow, he's steady, he is faithful, he's gracious, as he works the life of his son into me. And then that life could work itself out into the life of others. Romans 8:28 says that all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. God uses very definitive words. Words like all, or always, or will. He doesn't say sometimes, and he doesn't say maybe. Maybe things will work together for good. Maybe a few things will work together for good. Everything in each of our individual lives is going to work for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. But what I've come to realize, God determines the good. Because I begin to imagine what that good is going to look like, and I may have some desired outcome to what I may think that is going to look like, but God determines what the good is going to look like and when that good is going to take place. So you might look at my being sexually molested and think, well, was that good? Well, in the moment, it's pretty horrific act that I had to endure, but there are a lot of things when they first happen do not look good at all. I mean, it looks pretty bad at times. But here's the good in that, is that God taught me in that, after 25 years from the incident happening, how to be compassionate for this man, how to have grace for this man, how to forgive this man. He gave me the heart to do that. And so it doesn't get any better than that. Well, then you go 30 years out, 60. Why does God take 55 years to bring about the good? Well, I don't know, but 55 years is a pretty long time. With God, it's all relative. Time's relative. Doesn't matter to him. But to us, it matters. Well, what good came 30 years later? Well, he helped me to understand why I was having tears. It was because of the hurt that my dad had caused me. And the anger that I held on to. I didn't even know I had it, but I'm harboring anger towards my dad for 30 years. And those are what the tears are for. And so God, what is the good in all of that? Well, God taught me how to forgive my father, how to have grace for my father. I shared with my daughter after I had forgiven my dad, and just a reminder, dad wasn't alive when I worked through this. And I'm telling my daughter, Case, because she had gone through something similar, and she said, you know, Pop-Pop, it might have just been too much trauma for him, and his brain just blocked it, because he couldn't be there to protect you. Now, on the one hand, it's not realistic because he's out of town. But there's going to be something inherent in him as a dad and as a man. It's my role to protect my child, and I failed. And so I can understand that sometimes our brains just have a way of protecting us and block that. And so, but God gave me that understanding. And so he taught me how to forgive that, how to be tenderhearted towards my dad, how to have compassion for him and to forgive him. But he also asked me to ask my dad to forgive me for the anger I had harbored towards him. And so dad didn't have to be there for me to work through this with him. I mean, after I worked through all that, all of my stuff was gone. I didn't have to deal with it anymore. And God tells us in Isaiah 43:25, he says that I forgive for my sake. Forgiveness is always going to be for my sake. And this is what God's saying, I forgive you for my sake. And so to forgive my dad was for me, and it wasn't for dad. And it can be hard sometimes if you go and to seek forgiveness and some they don't recognize what they've done as anything that was hurtful to you. And it's hard to go into those things with to have no expectations of how they're going to respond. And to just know it's for my sake, when I ask them if they will, or I tell them that I forgive them for what they've done, it is solely for me. It's a great principle of forgiveness, to know that it's for my sake. God is always going to accomplish what his purpose in his heart, always. It doesn't matter how I fumble things up, if I fail in my faith, if I fail in my trust and my obedience, God is just going to keep moving. He's going to accomplish what he's purposed in his heart, and he just keeps moving on with me very graciously, compassionately. So God is in control of everything. He is behind everything that happens. When God's guidance is not obvious, in moments when he does not lift the darkness, just know he's there. We have to learn to trust that he's there. Jesus is there in the calm, and Jesus is there in the storm. I can only imagine with the disciples, they're in a raging storm. The wind's howling, the rain's blowing sideways, the waves are crashing. And the Lord Jesus is sitting there sleeping in the boat. I mean, who does that? You know, and these guys are freaking out, and they're pretty sure they're going to die in the midst of it. And Jesus is just sleeping like a baby. But he's there. He's always there. He tells us, I will never leave you, and I'm never going to forsake you. I'm there. I love you to the end. I'm there to the very end of the age with you. Always will I be with you. And then nothing happens unless God wills it. And he's willing stuff all the time. And for me, you know, to be a people pleaser, it would be nice someday if I get to a point that I don't care what people think. That would be such freedom in that. But you know, my weaknesses, my inabilities, I don't think God is as concerned about those things. Or my strengths, or my abilities. I think he's looking for two things. He's looking for my willingness, and he's looking for me to be yielded to him. That's all he's looking for. Am I willing, and am I going to be yielded to him and to his, to whatever it is he's asking me to do? And I will, you know, Terry and I have certainly struggled with some fear with our kids. A lot of it's had to do with money, you know, and rescuing them, and we've struggled with some of that, and I hope we're coming to the end of it, you know, but it's just been a struggle for us, and I wish it weren't, but that, you know, fear has kind of driven, it's gotten control of the basketball under the net, and it's elbowed faith and trust out at times, and so we're wrestling with that at this time, and we're still learning to trust God with some things, and God is so gracious and been kind to us. So, who are you, Lord? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to give my life to? Thank you.